Welcome, everyone, to episode 5 of the Oddcast podcast with Greg Doyle and Matt Jones. We every week we're going to add a different thing. We added music last week. This time we have a guest that we're excited about. Don't know what he's going to go into, but we're going to ask him about Ohio State, Michigan man, Desmond Howard. So we'll get to him in a little bit. But first, let me bring in our man, Greg Doyle. Greg, how are you?
I'm fine, and I'm now making requests. Like last week, I asked for Eminem. We got Eminem. This week, I asked for an actual song, "You Sexy Thing" by Hot Chocolate, because it just occurs to me that what better than to have a man's voice singing "You Sexy Thing"? Doesn't that reek of me?
Yeah, it does. Every show has ended with you saying something, some man crush, some something, and so I expect that to come out again today in some form.
Well, you have seen Desmond Howard on TV. You know what he looks like, right?
I do. So I'm expecting it with him.
Actually, let me tell you my story, my Desmond Howard story, just real quick. I know him only through somebody else. I know him actually through his wife. His wife's on Twitter, and she's fabulous. Her name is Pink Funk on Twitter.
No, wait, what's her name?
Pink Funk is her.
Well, that's not her given name. She's not like Old Man Funk's girl.
No, her name is Rebecca Howard. And anyway, I didn't know she was Desmond's
wife.
She
goes by Pink Funk. All right, gotcha.
Yeah, she's a very clever, sharp woman on Twitter, and so
the name suggests that.
Yeah, she follows me. I follow her. We're communicating and whatnot. And then I looked her up one day and realized, wow, that's Desmond's wife. Are you? And it turns out she is. And so anyway, a couple months later, I see Desmond in the weight room at the Final Four, and I walk up to him. Hey, Desmond, how are you doing? My name is Greg Doyle. Oh, hi, Greg. How are you doing? He doesn't know who I am. That's fine. How are you doing, Greg? And I say, I'm fine. So I want to let you know that I love your wife. And he's
Did he enjoy that being the way that you approached him?
No, he's holding a 20-pound dumbbell, and it looks like he's going to hit me in the head with it. I'm like, wait a minute, that came out wrong. I know your wife on Twitter, and I think she's fabulous on Twitter, but actually, Desmond, I love you. And that freaked him out even worse. Anyway, let's move on.
All right, well good. I went to Pink Funk's thing. She has 11 people following. Maybe a different Pink Funk because
she's
not even
on 1,100.
Okay, all right, they're different Pink Funk. All right, well let's get to the news of the day, because I think the news of the day breaking here just a little bit before we tape this is that Gary Williams is leaving the University of Maryland. I assume to retire, but you know, I guess there's in theory you could always do something else, but it looks like to retire. Gary Williams leaving Maryland. Now, you're a perfect person to speak on this because you've been a long time Gary Williams. Well, I don't know, how would you describe your relationships with Gary Williams?
A long time, I guess, observer, chronicler of Gary Williams. I've gone both ways with him, like I go both ways with so many people I've covered. That's not an innuendo or anything, but like, you know, Mike Krzyzewski, I've written a glowing book about him, and then I've just ripped him to the point that Duke fans think I'm the worst guy in the world. So I'm that way with Gary too. He's a brilliant coach. He gets more out of his players typically, and hasn't in the last couple of years, but gets more out of teams than most coaches can expect to. But at the same time, he goes nuts in the sidelines in a way that I just really don't understand. So anyway, I can go both ways with him. His retirement is, it's not out of the blue in that he's 66 years old. I think, yeah, he just turned 66, but it seems like early May is a weird time to announce it.
That's my thing about it. I would think it's an odd time for him to announce it, because you would think if this was a retirement, he would have done it immediately after the season. The coaching carousel most believed had ended, and now it sort of gets churned back up with the Maryland job. Why do you think it happened if you were a guessing man?
Well, if I was a guessing man, what I think happened the background of what I know is that I know that Gary, like a lot of coaches that age group, Jim Calhoun is one, talked about it a lot at the Final Four. Dean Smith used to talk about this. Bill Guthridge, who replaced Dean Smith at Carolina, talked about this. When you get to a certain age, and Gary's 66, after every season, Jim Calhoun's right there right now. I'm guessing Jim Boeheim is too, although he isn't talking about it. I'm just assuming. You finish the year and you're tired, and you know, because you're getting older and it's a young man's game and the recruiting is a grind. Anyway, I know for the last several years, Gary Williams has ended the year and thought about it. Just you know, taking stock of how much longer do I want to do it. I don't, you know, I've got as much money as I need. Is the fire still burning? And the answer was always yes, the fire's still burning. Maybe it's as simple as he took a month, kept waiting for that fire to kick back on, the pilot light to kick in, and it never did.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. He's also, in the last few years, I mean, the reality is his game has slipped. I'm not so much coaching, but in recruiting especially, they just have not been major players. You know, it's not the same Gary Williams of even 7 or 8 years ago, the Juan Dixon, Steve Blake Gary Williams. Is it just he's tired of losing recruits to teams that he shouldn't lose them to?
Well, the recruiting's always been something he didn't enjoy. There are some coaches that like to get out there and roll their sleeves up and get dirty, and he's never been that guy. He's never, to his credit, he's never been a guy that wanted to mix it up with guys that he knew were cheating. He didn't want to deal with that.
Well, but why do you say to his credit? I mean, to his credit, that's part of the gig.
Well, and to his credit, he didn't succumb like a lot of good coaches do. They succumb to, well, if you want to beat a pig, you got to get down in the mud and wrestle him.
Well, man, how do you know that? How do you know he didn't? Is it just because he hasn't gotten caught?
I don't. You're right. I don't know he didn't. There's just a handful of coaches, not many. There's a handful of coaches that you just kind of think to yourself. You base it on many things, but one thing you base it on is who do they sign, who do they get, where do they come from. Williams has never been a guy that's gotten anybody. He's never gotten anybody that you look at and say, huh, that's weird, or that, you know, that guy has a weird background. I mean, never. And I think that said, I have no idea who's clean out there and who's not. But that national championship that he won back about a decade ago, in some ways was, well, in a lot of ways, was the worst thing that could have happened for him as a recruiter, because he won that thing. Juan Dixon was nobody coming out of high school, nobody. Lonnie Baxter was nobody. Mouton was a transfer. Chris Wilcox was actually the best recruit on that team, the highest profile guy. Steve Blake was merely a good recruit, but not a great one. And he put that team together. Todd Holden off the bench, nobody. And they win a national championship, and I think he got it in his head that, you know, just give me some guys and I can win.
Well, that was the same thing that happened with Tubby Smith at Kentucky after a while. He had a couple good teams with guys people didn't know, and he was like, I can take any guy, and it's not true that you can win with any guy.
That's true. Now, coaches, as confident as they are, their egos are so huge, they kind of can lie to themselves, like I'm sure Tubby did, and tell themselves that, you know, if I can win with Gerald Fitch, I can win with anybody. When the reality is, Gerald Fitch was a borderline NBA player. I mean, he was a really good player. Maybe he was barely a top 100 recruit out of high school, but he was a great college player. And Maryland had great college players. And it turns out that Steve Blake has been a longtime NBA player. Juan Dixon, I think, is still in the league. Lonnie Baxter had issues off the court. Chris Wilcox still in the league. So they had three or four NBA players on that team. But it looked like, I just got anybody I wanted to out of high school and we won a national title. And in hindsight, it wasn't the case. But Gary's never been one to, A, roll his sleeves up and think about getting dirty. But, B, and this is something that everybody knows is a fact, he didn't really want to work that hard in recruiting. He wanted his assistants to do it. He wanted to close the deal out, but he was not a guy that was going to famously work 17 hours a day just so he could sign some 15-year-old or get a 15-year-old to answer the phone for him. That wasn't his deal.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Now, what about Maryland as a job? Is Maryland a top-tier job? I've made the case that there are essentially six top-tier jobs: Kentucky, Duke, North Carolina, UCLA, Kansas. Maybe depending on how you see Indiana, you throw that in there too. And then there's a second tier that are jobs that individual coaches have made. I would say Maryland and Lefty before Gary. I don't put it as a top-tier job, do you?
Oh, gosh. If you're talking about top-tier, the top six or so, no, it's not even close. I don't know that it's a top 20 job. You look at the ACC, and just off the top of my head, it's obviously North Carolina and Duke are better jobs. It's debatable. NC State, that's debatable, but that might be a better job. Virginia's close. You know, it might be the fifth best job in that league, fourth or fifth. And if you're the fourth or fifth best job in your league, I don't care how good your league is, that's not a great job. And that's what Maryland is right now. And the timing of his leaving, he didn't do Maryland any favors, because this is not, you know, all but like Shaka Smart, for example. A guy like Shaka Smart would have been perfect at Maryland, but Shaka Smart just signed a huge mega extension, and there's no way, even if he can leave, even if he had an agent who could figure out a way to get him out of there without penalty, it's a matter of a sense of honor. A guy like Shaka Smart is not going to leave VCU 1 month after signing because Maryland came open. So Gary really tied Maryland's hands by leaving at this time.
A couple of people say, a couple of the early reports say that they will focus initially on Mike Bray at Notre Dame. Is that a person that if you were Mike Bray, you would leave Notre Dame to go to Maryland?
Well, Mike Bray, I know he coached at DeMatha, the high school there, for about 7 years, and then Duke got him off the DeMatha staff and sent him on his way to greatness, or at least to being college head coach. And I think Mike Bray may even have attended DeMatha and might be from that neck of the woods. I'm talking out of turn here, but that I can see that making a ton of sense for Mike Bray back in April, in early April. I don't know that it makes any sense now, but if that's been his dream job, if he is a DeMatha guy through and through, if he's a Maryland DC guy through and through, then this job will come open possibly once in his coaching lifetime, and it's now. So if this is his dream job, then he'll go take it. But only if it's his dream job. If it's not, you just don't. Wherever you are, you don't leave a really good job in May for Maryland unless it's your dream job, or unless you're like at a mid-major and that's a huge step up.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see which way they go, and will it start, like I said, another round of kind of musical chairs. Now, another piece of news on the college basketball front that comes out today is our man Gus Johnson is leaving CBS. They couldn't reach a contract with CBS and will no longer be doing March Madness. There are a couple of reports he may go to Fox Sports and do college football with the Pac-10 network, etc. Gus is always a guy, Greg, who really sort of connects with, I think, younger people. Younger people really like Gus. He's an internet sensation in many ways, but it is sad. I mean, I thought he was the future of college basketball as a voice, and now, at least in the short term, that won't be the case.
Well, how weird is it that CBS had Packer, Billy Packer, and shoot, I forget who was Packer on with.
He was on with Nance. I mean, for long time.
Nance and Packer forever, but Packer forever, and kind of replaced him with Gus Johnson, I believe, right?
Well, no, Nance is still on there. I mean, it's still now it's Nance and Clark Kellogg.
Where's Gus Johnson in all this?
The good thing is Greg does work for CBS Sports, so it's not like he would have a reason to know this.
Well,
at
you
all.
Know, the truth of the matter is, I'm at those games.
You are. You're not watching them on TV. That's true. No, Gus.
I'm watching them, right? I'm there.
Gus works for CBS, but he's not the main. He's not in the main thing. He usually works with Lynn Elmore or one of those people.
Oh, so I can't even make the comparison. Do well, you know, he replaced Billy Packer, and now he's gone too. Well,
no, you can't.
Off the top of my head, well, yeah, I can say whatever I want because clearly I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to CBS.
Yeah, at this point, you know, listen, when you already go, who was with Billy Packer? Jim Nance. Well, who's with Jim Nance now? Billy Packer. No, it's okay. Listen, it's all right. You don't need to know this stuff.
There are some things that off the top of my head, you know, I swallow my brain and I forget. But, like, if you gave me a multiple choice, I'd go, oh, yeah, obviously it was Jim Nance. But just off the top of my head, slips out. But I wonder if this is one of those functions of a guy gets so big so fast, and it's the perfect storm. His contract just came up, and I'm speaking out of turn. I have no idea. Obviously, I don't know anything about this stuff.
Obviously.
But I wonder if, you know, he got so big so fast, and his contract came up right now, and he thinks he's worth a small fortune, and whatever that fortune is, CBS didn't agree. And in fact, knowing nothing, I'm sure that's what happened. I'm sure that he you know, he can stick his finger in the air and feel how hard the wind's blowing in his back, and he realizes, wow, I'm big time. And maybe he thought he was bigger than CBS thought he was. We'll see if whatever his price is, we'll see if he gets it.
It is interesting. He is one of the very few. If you think about it, the stars in sports broadcasting are almost always the color announcers. I mean, if I were to say to you, what's the biggest name in college football, you might say Herb Street or, you know, Lee Corso, whatever.
Yeah.
If I were to say in basketball, you'd say Vital or something like that. Pro football, you know, you would say Phil Sims or whatever. It's very rare that the play-by-play guy is a guy that people say, I want to hear that play-by-play guy. Normally, they're sort of generic personalities, but he's a guy people will tune in to hear his play-by-play.
Well, and the truth is that most of the time we don't want the play-by-play guy to be the story, because when the game's going on, you want the play-by-play guy to be almost like an official or an offensive lineman. We don't want to notice you. If you do your job well, we don't really even notice you, because you kind of, you're the moderator, but you're not the story. But Gus did it and does it with such sincerity. I mean, he does make himself part of the story, but he does it with such sincerity. It's not an act. It's not a put-on. He's really excited about this stuff, and you kind of get caught up in his emotion.
I think that's exactly right. He seems like a fan. I mean, he seems like a guy that's and so when he is calling the end of a game, it just seems more exciting because he's doing it. And I'm sad to see him go. Well, hopefully, maybe try to get him on this this podcast pretty soon. Now, in terms of other news outside of the world of college basketball, I can't tell. Is the NFL lockout, is it on or is it off again? I think the lockout is on again. Last week, you clearly made clear that you were not interested. I would assume the fact that there is no that the lockout's back on means you're back to not interested still.
Well, I tell you what interests me is that the lockout is on, but it's the appeal is going to be heard. And I was stunned by this, and with your legal background, you can probably shed some light on this. And I understand this is how it works, but it still stuns me every time it happens. The appellate court fast-tracked, agreed to the NFL's request to fast-track the appeal. So they're going to hear this lockout and decide on it really soon, at least in their opinion. And the court date has been set for like early June.
Yes.
So the season is 5 months away, and we're going to take one entire month to do nothing because we're fast-tracking it, and fast-tracking it doesn't mean we're going to hear your argument tomorrow. We're going to hear it in early June. That's fast-tracking legally?
Yes, and let me give you an example. I stopped practicing law last May, okay? And I had right before one of the last things I did before I stopped practicing law was file an appeal to be heard on the Sixth Circuit, which is the area that I'm around. We are now, it's now May again, so it's been a year, still not had oral argument yet. Now that's a year, and it's actually not even on the calendar yet. And nothing's happened. They're just kind of sitting on it and haven't scheduled it yet. That's just the way this stuff works.
Yeah, and you can see why lawyers' fees are so high, because a year will come, not in your case, I guess, but for this month, for example, the NFL attorneys and the union's attorneys, instead of getting this out of the way in 3 days, because surely they're prepared. I mean, they've been doing nothing but thinking about this stuff for 2 years. At the drop of a hat, they ought to be able to make an argument right away, and yet they're going to spend the next month charging $300 an hour to, I don't know, fine-tune their voice. I guess they're going to gargle salt water for a month and get charged $300 an hour to do it.
What did you think about, of course, the big national news is the Osama bin Laden getting captured and et cetera in the sports world. You know, Rashard Mendenhall tweets all these tweets right afterwards saying, what kind of person celebrates death? It's amazing how people can hate someone they've never heard speak. We only hear one side. A lot of things that sort of go against the vast majority of what people think. And it became a big story. I don't agree with anything Mendenhall said, but I was a little surprised, Greg, that anybody particularly cares what he said. And I sort of wonder, is this just the media trying to find someone to sort of go after because, hey, let's find somebody who's against all these things everybody else is for?
No, I don't think it's that, although the media is guilty of that at times, I'm sure of it. But Twitter's not the greatest gauge of all time. But I can tell you that when Mendenhall did his things on Twitter, that people, not media people, but I'm sure media people too, but people on Twitter were going nuts over what Mendenhall had said. So it wasn't just the media went out and decided, we don't like what he said, and we're going to make it a big deal. No, the people made it a big deal, and the media tapped into that and followed up on it. Mendenhall, if you look at his Twitter bio, it's very brief. He says, I'm a conversationalist and a football player, or something like that. And then in that long clarification...
I'd like to say I'm a conversationalist,
yeah,
by
the
way.
Come on.
I'm a conversationalist. I have conversations for pay.
It's ridiculous. Well, and then on his long clarification blog he wrote to explain his tweets, he talked more about this whole idea of being a conversationalist, and I like to put ideas out there and generate conversation and intellectual curiosity and all this stuff. And, you know, Mendenhall likes to paint himself, obviously, as a Renaissance man, a man of ideas, a deep thinker, when the reality is, Rashard, you're a running back. You were put on this earth to hold a football and run as hard as you can until someone brings you down. That's what you're good at.
Yes.
And you're very clearly not good at posing deep thoughts that don't do anything other than tick everybody off. Because right below his tweets on, unfortunately, I'm looking at his Twitter timeline because I want to find out, what else does this guy say? Like five tweets below the bin Laden stuff was a two or three tweets in a row from Mendenhall basically telling women, you've got to give your man oral pleasure, because if you don't, he'll go out and find it somewhere else.
Well, there you go. That's a conversationalist, though. I mean, we're learning via conversation about something important.
Well, no, that right there, that's exactly what I would expect from an NFL running back. That's what you're going to talk about. You're going to talk about oral sex, because that you're a pro athlete and you're a shallow, you know, you're as shallow as a backyard swimming pool. That's what you are, and that's fine. But don't pretend that you're this deep thinking intellectual, and you're, especially when you talk about 9/11 and how there's, don't tell me a plane can't bring down that building. Really, a plane is like a 2,000 ton bomb with gas in it, and if that gas ignites, you don't think that can bring down a building? Really?
Yeah, but see, I guess what I don't understand is why anyone initially gave this any credibility. I mean, if it was some random person, it's not like Rashard Mendenhall is Derek Jeter. I mean, it's not like he's somebody. The reason we don't know he's a conversationalist is we've never cared what he was doing before, because he wasn't good enough for us to care. So we're going to care now. I don't understand why that would be the case.
I do wonder if he was a different running back, if he was a guy that had gained 312 yards, you know, if he was Liddell Betts, for example, I don't think it's that big a deal. But Rashard Mendenhall is, while he's not a future Hall of Famer, I don't think, the fact is, I have to say I don't think, because he has run for over 1,000 yards, I believe, a couple times. The Steelers were.
If he's not a Hall of Famer, Rashard Mendenhall's not a Hall of Famer.
Probably not, but he's only been in the league for about 3 years. And I, you know, if he has the exact same year he just had, 8 more times,
well, yes,
he's a Hall of Famer.
That's true. And so if that happens, then he can tweet about 9/11.
So he is good enough, possibly, to have some traction. And he plays for the Steelers as a flagship. You know, he's not a Seattle Seahawk.
And Rooney is a big Obama supporter, and that may be, you know, that's, I think, part of it as well. You know,
And Chris Douglas Roberts of the NBA also offered...
Yeah, but why does anyone care what Chris Douglas Roberts thinks? I couldn't have even told you he was in the league.
Well, he at least... he had some interesting thoughts, you know, and it was objectionable to a lot of people, and I'm not telling you I agree with his thoughts, but they were, this was a conversationalist, because Douglas Roberts said, yeah, we got Bin Laden, that's great, but 900,000 people had to die to get this one man, because, you know, the war we started and all that stuff, and, you know, patriotic Americans don't want to hear that, and even maybe not, you know, not you don't have to be a war hawk to think, nah, that's, well, I don't want to hear that either, but at least there's like some validity to that.
Well, it's Chris Douglas Roberts, and I don't care that – I just – here's what I think happens with the media. I think they say, all right, everybody's cheerleading. Everybody's happy. We've got this happy moment. Let's see if we can find a bunch of idiot athletes to go – to sort of fit a narrative of stupid athletes tweeting. And I don't – I if you have to reach down to Chris Douglas Roberts, then your point you're trying to make isn't valid, because in any group of 2,000 – I mean, how many professional athletes are there in football, basketball, baseball, hockey? That's thousands.
Yeah.
Any group of thousands of people, you're going to find one person who's going to say something outlandish, and yet we make it a story and then go, oh, Chris Douglas Roberts and Rashard Mendenhall, what's wrong with those guys?
See, I think actually you're doing exactly what you think the media is doing. I think you are looking for a narrative of, well, the media is just, you know, bottom feeding. And
they are bottom feeding.
No,
the media proved me correct at all times.
I'm angry about this Mendenhall and even the Douglas
who
Roberts.
Who is angry?
A lot of people were angry.
But who is really angry, Greg? Who really, at the end of the day, is anyone's life affected by what Chris Douglas Roberts tweets?
Well, no, but is anybody's life affected by what Bill Simmons tweets? No, but
yes, because Bill Simmons has a million. Listen, you know how many Twitter followers Rashard Mendenhall had before this happened?
I do know.
13,000.
I know, and he went up to 40 within about 48 hours.
So he had 13,000 people. Now, this, I am by no means Bill Simmons. I have 25,000. So he had half of what I have. And you made him important, not you, but the people who wrote this story made him important. Nobody cared. Do you think the 13,000 people, that's a small community? Why does it matter?
Well, it doesn't matter. But you had, this is the world today. You had name recognition, hot topic, crazy words, and that, there's your recipe for a meal right there.
I'm not even sure Chris Douglas Roberts has name recognition anymore, but you know.
because his name is, he's got three names, that's he had a 50% greater chance of name recognition than anybody else. If it was Chris Douglas, that's only two names.
That's true. That's a very good point. All right, well, I'll tell you what. We will switch gears now and move from talking about Chris Douglas Roberts and his thoughts and what it means to be a conversationalist to bringing in our next guest. From ESPN, he does College Game Day, he does College Football Live, he does college everything in some form. Desmond Howard. Desmond, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and Matt and Greg, thanks for having me.
Well, we're very, very happy to have you here on the Oddcast podcast, your guest number four over the course of the, one of these days. If this is 10 years, goes for 10 years, you were in the single digits, like a fine bourbon or something like that.
I'm one of the early guys. I got in on the ground level. I feel special.
That's exactly right. Well,
importantly, you're batting cleanup. Let's make a baseball analogy, Matt. I'm sure Desmond can handle multiple sports. Batting cleanup, Desmond. whoever our ninth guest, we're not going to tell him he's our ninth guest because he'll be offended by that.
I would think that's right. Well, let's start by talking about probably the biggest story of the offseason, which is the situation at Ohio State. All that's gone on, let's bring it in easy. Do you think Jim Tressel should be the coach next season at Ohio State?
I think it's really hard for them to keep him under what has happened. I think that other coaches have been fired for less. But you know, it's an interesting dynamic when you watch the three people involved at the university and making that happen, which is the coach Jim Tressel, the athletic director Gene Smith, and then the president Gordon Gee. They had that press conference early March where they released the information that Tressel did know and had the information since April about the Tech Five. And if you watched that press conference like I did, I walked away looking at these guys like this was a circus act. I mean, under the circumstances, with something that's as serious as the issue that they were addressing that day, for the president of the university to stand there and say, he quipped about, I hope Jim Tressel doesn't fire me. I just thought that was extremely odd under those circumstances. And now if you watch how this whole thing is playing out, the huge hole that Jim Tressel has put himself in, they still aren't, they don't seem to be making any moves towards firing this guy when they have every right to do so. And he's putting their program in a worse position every day that passes.
And do you sense that because you're such a high-profile Michigan alum, do you sense that you're allowed to have opinions and state them about Ohio State program if they're negative? I mean, are you just getting mountains of grief every time you open your mouth and say the words Jim and Tressel?
Well, Greg, you know what? That's a good question. I tell you this. For quite some time now, I've told, people, listen, Ohio State fans, they're some of the most ruthless fans in all of college football. I say, no, these guys, they kind of push the envelope. People would dismiss that simply because I went to Michigan, as if, I have a bias against their fans. I have to remind people, listen, I don't have anything against Ohio State or their fans because they never beat me. I have a clean record against the Buckeyes. I'm undefeated against the Buckeyes. I don't even know what it tastes like to lose them. So with that being the backdrop, I don't have anything against those dudes. What they do against Michigan now, that's that team's problem. That's that team's issue. But when I had anything to do with the outcome of the game, we won. So with that knowledge, you have to understand, I don't have anything negative to say about them because, they did this, they did that to me. So when I talk about their fan base or, just the way they treat people, not just myself, like I do this for a living. I speak to other fans who have sat in the stands and played against, their team played against Ohio State, and they sat there with Ohio State fans, and they say the same thing. So when I say this, I'm coming from a more broad perspective. So that's the listener's problem. That's the viewer's problem. If they want to dismiss what Desmond Howard says about Ohio State or about Jim Tressel simply because he went to Michigan, then that's their own issue they got to get over. I can't control that. All I'm going to do is give them the facts, just like I did about the press conference. That's a fact. That president, I mean, to me, that's embarrassing. For him to sit there with such buffoonery when a serious issue like that is on the table, and he quips like that at that moment. I mean, to me, that speaks volumes.
Do you, you mentioned that about the fans. It's interesting. I'm not as familiar with the Ohio State fans, but I've heard what you said a decent amount. You've now, as part of your college game day, you've traveled all over the country. Who would you say are the best, leave Michigan out because I don't want you to, besides Michigan, the best college football fans, and who would you say are the worst?
Listen, Matt and Greg. My colleague Kirk Herbstreit is from that area, from that part of Ohio. Played at Ohio State, was a captain on the football team. Wife was a cheerleader. His dad coached at Ohio State. The fan base, a small percentage of them, whatever the case may be, made this guy uproot his family and move him to Nashville.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have to take it from Desmond Howard. Go talk to Kirk Herbstreit. You see what I'm saying? I mean, you ain't have to take it from me. Okay, I went to Michigan. You want to dismiss it? That's fine. That's cool. Go talk to Kirk Herbstreit. You don't get more Ohio State than Kirk Herbstreit.
That just recently happened. Do you think that was, I mean, was that precipitated in large part by the fans?
From my understanding, all reports that have come from Kirk Herbstreit, yes.
Yeah.
Well, Desmond, listen, Michigan has had, you know, some hot water themselves with Rich Rodriguez and all that, and I'm bringing that up not to say, well, your school's done this or that. I'm bringing it up because they've been in some hot water. It's required all commentators, me, but you, to discuss the situation. Have you caught any of that heat from Michigan folks just for saying anything at all about Michigan, you know, and whatever they were going through with Rich Rod?
No. I never caught any heat from the Michigan folks because, you know, and there, you know, again, Greg and Matt, it was really, really, when you look at the problem or, you know, the allegation, they were kind of trivial. I mean, in essence, in what we deal with in college football, they really were. Are you talking about they stayed, you know, in the building watching film a little longer than they were supposed to? You know, they didn't start the clock on a practice when the stretching period started, and they're supposed to start when the stretching period starts. So that meant that they practiced a little extra, a little longer. Aren't those really trivial? Now, I'm not saying that because obviously I'm an alum, but aren't those really trivial issues when we look at the big picture of college football?
Well, if you're going to compare it to, there's no question, if you're going to compare it to knowing that Terrell Pryor had done something that probably would compromise his eligibility and sitting on that, yeah, compared to that, completely trivial.
We look at what just happened at Boise State. I would say the same thing about Boise State. Those things were trivial. What happened? I mean, the women's tennis team, they're off the chain. They went rogue. They really did.
You know, Boise State tennis is known for going rogue.
I know. But the football team got caught up in that web, and now, you know, they you know, got some minor infractions, and some things cost like $1. I mean, like $2.37. Things like that. See, that's, to me, that's trivial.
Now, back on the Ohio State situation, yeah. Is it? Do you believe these sort of violations? And we're talking about, you know, with Pryor, you know, trading this for a tattoo or whatever it is. Do you think that kind of thing is prevalent all over college football, basketball, or is it, you know, sort of isolated incidents?
Well, let me start off by telling you this. When it first came out, as, you know, amazing blue as I am, I told everybody that, first of all, I do not agree with that rule. You're going to tell me this man won, this young man won this award, he won this trophy, he won this ring, whatever it is, it's his, it's his possession. It's his possession. He can't sell it, but yet you have a student sitting next to him as his, you know, culture anthropology class, and if she has a ring, she can sell it. I mean, I just don't agree with that rule. Now, do I think that happens? I'm sure it does. I'm sure it does. Maybe not, you know, something as unique as a pair of gold pants. I don't think that, you know, people are, I don't know, that's not a wise move, you know.
Yes, that's just not smart.
Hey, yeah, not many people you know, possess those, so to sell those or something like that, something that's so rare. But, yeah, I do think that student-athletes, you know, sell some things to get some money because they don't have money. They're broke.
Well, Desmond, how about let's forget about guessing what's going on out there. Let's talk about you because you were in the late 80s. Obviously, you were a stud athlete. You won the Heisman Trophy in 1991. If I remember right, I believe you set the record at the time for the highest percentage of first-place votes ever by a Heisman winner. So you won by a huge margin. You had to have been a big-time recruit, had to have been. And I'm not – let's just – we all know the Michigan would never break a rule, so forget that. But did somebody out there, another school, sweeten the pot, a booster, this, that, the other, without naming schools, although by all means do it if you want to, but was somebody trying to cheat with you?
You know, Greg, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I didn't come across that, and I feel cheated now. I really do. I'm watching some of these guys with marginal talent talking about $500 handshakes and things like that. I'm like, you know, where was this when I was coming up? You know, so I didn't see any of that type of behavior. Now, I've been to players' dorms on recruiting trips, you know, and they had things they shouldn't have had in the dorms, but no boosters ever gave me anything.
Do you, if you looking at college football, I saw the story, there's been a lot of talk about the Justice Department looking into the BCS and that type of thing. I wonder, you're kind of engaged in it on a day-to-day basis. If you could see one rule changed in college football or one sort of thing that we do in college football that should be differently, should be done differently, what would it be?
Well, I think one rule that I don't like is the celebration rule. I think the celebration rule it gives the officials too much power. You know, it's almost like they can't distinguish celebrating from taunting. And when you try to take celebrations out of the game, then you, in essence, you're taking some of the fun out of the game. And that's just not, you know, it is a game. You know, especially at this level, even though it's a, you know, it's a business to everybody else except those playing, it's still a game to them if they're quote unquote amateur status. So that's one of the rules that I absolutely hate.
And what a shock that is, because one of the great moments in college football history, and in fact, I'm looking right now on my computer, there's a ranked the number six moment in Big Ten football history by AOL News, was your Heisman pose that you struck in 1991, that if you were to do this now, you'd get a penalty, you get ejected from the game, you might get blackballed from football. You'd have to go play rugby in England if you did that today.
You're right.
Where did that come from, Desmond? Is that something that in the back, like you know, T.O. had his Sharpie in his pocket, he was waiting for it, and he pulled it out. Did that just pop into your head at that moment, or were you thinking ahead of time, if I score a TD against Ohio State, I'm striking the pose?
You know, it's a combination of both. I knew if I scored it, because I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, so that's a, you know, the Ohio State game is a big, big game for me. And I said, if I get in the end zone today, I want to do something special. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I actually had practiced doing a backflip that summer. This gymnast who I was seeing, she had taught me how to do a backflip, amongst other things. So I wanted to do a backflip to the end zone. And so I'm running down the sideline. And, before that, one of my teammates, Lance Dotton, he had told me before, he said, man, you should do something, you know, this is like midway through the season when I was a legitimate front runner for the Heisman. He said, you should do something in the end zone, you know, I don't know, a Heisman pose or something. You got to do something. I'm like, listen, we need to pump our brakes on that because Rocket Ishmael, the year before, we all thought was a shoe-in to win it, but Ty Detmer beat him out. So I didn't want to jinx my chances, so... Now, fast forward to the Ohio State game, the last game of the year, I said, if I get in the zone, I want to do something special. So as I, you know, saw the punter, I'm like, okay, I'm going to score. I'm debating with myself, you know, the whole time down if I'm going to do this backflip or not. And I kind of, like, chicken out because I'm like, man, if I don't hit this backflip right, I'm going to be on Sports Center for the wrong thing.
Desmond,
the goal line, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do the highest. I just did it, you know, and it was brief. I mean, if you watch it, it was so quick, but it was one of those moments that it was frozen in time.
Desmond, clear this up for me. Did you just say that as you're running down the field about to score a touchdown, in your head you're debating how you're going to celebrate this thing?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, man. If you watch the because I knew I was going to score. I wasn't worried about anybody catching me, but I'm like, am I going to do it? No, am I going to do it? Yeah, because if you watch the the run I had in the Super Bowl against the New England Patriots, that kickoff return for a touchdown, I was, like, you can see my eyes, I was looking at the Jumbotron. So I'm very aware of things, you know, when I'm on that field. I'm looking at the Jumbotron just to make sure no one's behind me, because I knew I wanted to slow down to do the robot.
Very nice. Now, I've noticed over the course of your years, how long have you been on game day so far?
Six seasons.
I've noticed as you've gone on, you seem to me to be much more comfortable sort of showcasing your personality, being a little bit more controversial. I feel like every year we get to know more and more of you. When I saw you on the first year, I was like, oh, come on, Desmond, let me know what you're like. And by this year, you've become like a key part in terms of the personality of a show that's really built on personality. Has that been a conscious decision by you, or is it just you being more comfortable? What is it?
I think it's a combination of all the above. You got to keep in mind, 6 years ago, we didn't have the major issues that we're dealing with today. You know, we didn't have the pay-for-play on the scale that we just saw a year ago. I mean, where a parent may have asked for $180,000 for his kid to go to a school. Like, we didn't have that 6 years ago, so that wasn't an issue on the show. And so there have been some issues that have come across the desk that I feel very passionate about, and it lets my personality come out. Plus, 6 years ago, I wasn't on the desk as often as I am now. You know, I'm on the desk full time. And then, you know, it's a whole different skill set, too. This is something that there wasn't, like, rehearsals or practices or things like that. I was kind of thrown right into the fire right out the gate. So, as time goes, you get more reps, you become more comfortable. You get more familiar with the people you're working with and with the landscape and how everything works. So I think it's a combination of all of the above.
Well, Greg is asleep there, so I'll go ahead with...
I'm sorry to put you to sleep, Greg.
No. I was pausing thinking it's been 20 minutes. So I was going to let Matt probably...
No. We've got a few more. I want to ask you again about on game day. You guys get to go all over the country. And here's my question. All over the country, college campuses, there are these beautiful women everywhere. You got the tailgate scene everywhere. I would think that is an amazingly fun gig to spend every Saturday on a different college campus.
I'm gonna tell you, Matt and Greg, what makes it fun, and you guys will probably understand this better than most, is the people that you work with too. Obviously, it's a great atmosphere for the show, but what makes the show very exciting for me and a lot of fun are the people I work with. Chris Fowler, to me, you know, he's tops. He's the best of the best. He's incredibly insightful, witty, intelligent. I mean, and he keeps the traffic moving so well. And obviously Herb Street is as knowledgeable as they come. He has an incredible recall. And then Coach Corso, I mean, you know, this guy's one of one. You know what I'm saying? They don't make him like this guy anymore. And we're just so lucky and fortunate to have him on our show. So that group that I work with, I mean, this is a group that even when we're not on air, you don't mind going out to dinner with them or hanging with them because, you know, they're just they're fun to be around. I think that's what makes the show so successful. You know, people always talk about chemistry. I think we have a genuine chemistry of how we feel about each other that comes across our audience. I think that's what helps make our show so successful.
But I want to hear about the rivalry with you and Herb Street, and this is not Ohio State, Michigan. This is actually more about something that I unfortunately, am becoming known for a little bit on this well-received podcast, and that is my man crushes. Herb Street's right up there, but you're gaining ground fast. And so my thing I want you to tell me is when you guys go out to a Chili's on some college campus somewhere. Wherever you go, you know, Herb Street.
They're not going to Chili's. Desmond, you're not going to a college campus and eating at Chili's, are you? I'm certain you're going to at least a local spot.
Yeah, go ahead. You're right.
It doesn't matter where he's eating. The point is, who's getting looked at more by the college co-ed? Is it Herb Street or is it you?
Oh, it's Herb Street. Herb Street's that guy. I mean, you know, I don't even think they may think I'm like a PA or something. He holds the camera. I don't know if they even recognize who I am sometimes. But, you know, Herb Street's been doing this for a long time. And, you know, he's pretty much a guy who you would consider the face of college football. And he's great at what he does. So I would say, you know, it's Herb Street.
Last question for you, Desmond. I want you mentioned we've talked Herb Street and Fowler. I am a huge Lee Corso guy, have been for years. I'm glad he's still doing the show and the way he does it. Are we going to keep seeing him? And what's he like off camera? I hope you tell me he's as entertaining and funny off as he is on.
He really is. And that was my point earlier. Like, we are on camera who we are off camera, and that's what makes it so fun to be around these guys, even if we're not on camera. Because, I mean, like, our meetings, oh, my God. Our Friday evening meetings before our Saturday show, those are, like, the best moments. And Coach Corso, he has, like, so many stories. He's just a guy who you can sit around, really, and listen to him talk for hours and hours, and you'll never get tired. He's that type of guy. He has great stories. He's a fantastic storyteller, and he's extremely entertaining.
Well, I'm from Kentucky, and he coached both Louisville and Indiana, but I still find a way to like Lee Corso. So we'll take him. Desmond Howard, ESPN College Game Day, thank you very much. We appreciate you coming on, and we'll do it again.
Hey, Matt and Greg, thanks for having me, guys. Keep up the good work.
All right, thanks a lot. That's Desmond Howard. Greg, before we go here, any last thoughts? What did you think about Desmond? I actually found him to be that was more personality. I found him to be a real interesting guy.
Well, he used the word buffoonery. Anybody that can use the word buffoonery in a sentence and keep going, that's awesome. The fact that he and I realize that a guy like T.O., you know, as they celebrate a touchdown, I suppose it shouldn't come as a shock to me that a great athlete would be thinking about his celebration while he's still in the middle of the field about to score. But that the idea that Desmond Howard is going to score on a punt return against Ohio State with the crowd going nuts, and in his head he's debating, do I do a backflip or do the Heisman pose? That's great stuff.
And then, you know, the news out of that is he essentially said Ohio State fans are the worst.
Well, look, it's hard to argue that based on the Herb Street story, and not just, well, we had a Michigan guy, of course he's going to say that. No, the Herb Street story, and you and I talked about that last week, I'm sure we'll talk about it again. It's so shocking that Mr. Ohio State, as Desmond Howard said, you don't get more Ohio State than Kirk Herb Street. And for that guy to feel like, I'm just not welcome in Columbus, that tells you that there's a large, and I'm sure it's a very minority, but a very loud minority of fans are out of touch with reality up there.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, we will see you all next week. A lot of news that we discussed. A lot of things happened right before we taped this. We'll see you next time. This is the Oddcast with Greg Doyle and Matt Jones.